All right. Welcome, everybody. 2020 continues, and
thank you.
With everything we're dealing with here, and this will be no different. A bit different than what we had last year, but I'm really happy and proud to be sitting here today. As we'll have our president here, Steve Phelps, addressing the media and touching on a variety of topics here with the annual state of the sport. We're doing this a little different than we have in the past. We've got some live media here in the deadline room, and then we have many of you remote attending, and we appreciate you all making the time and getting in on this one. So without any further ado, we're going to have Steve Phelps here. He's going to answer, say a few words to kick off, and then answer any and all of your questions as we go through it. So again, we've got it set up as we have with past Zooms. I'll raise your hand. We'll call on you to ask a question, and we'll move through it. So without any further ado, Steve, obviously, it's been an incredible year. A ton of adversity and challenges we've faced as a sport. Everybody here on this Zoom across the board has faced it. And yet we've persevered and we've actually succeeded and risen above it all. Steve, as the leader of our sport and going through it, maybe you can touch on this and what the year has been here, 2020, for all of us.
Sure. I'm gonna take this off just so you guys can hear me better, since you guys are significantly social distance here in the room. I'll start, typically as I do, by thanking the media for what they do to bring this sport closer to our fans. I know it's been a difficult year for all of you, as it has been for all of us. We ask you to respect, the bubble and do things remotely and virtually. And I know that's hard, but I'm really proud of the work that you guys have done in these difficult times. I think that, the stories were great stories that were produced, very fair. And again, we can't do any of this without you. You do bring this closer to the fans, and we appreciate all you do. So thank you. I know it has been a hard year, but you guys have come through it incredibly well. So with that, I did want to turn it to Eric's question. The year has been, in short, I would say extraordinary, although I could probably use 15 or 20 other words to try to get to something that it's just unprecedented in the history of our country, in the history of sports, and certainly in the history of our sport. I would suggest that this is the single most difficult year that we've faced as a sport. But through it all, this industry, and I've said this before, I believe this industry does adversity better than any sport. And if you think about it, we're at a competitive disadvantage. We don't own ourselves. We're not franchised, right? We've got independent contractors who come to race as one. And what we have done during this global pandemic is, I think, really, it's just nothing short of remarkable. We can't do what we did as a sport without coming together. So I want to thank the race teams, the racetracks, both those that we own that are part of NASCAR, but importantly, the folks at Speedway Motorsports in Pocono, Dover, and Indianapolis. It was just, without them, and then frankly, all of our partners, right? So our media partners, our sponsors, everyone that really banded together to create something that was really something to be proud of. And so as I sit here today, getting to crown two more champions today and another one tomorrow, and the one last night with Sheldon Creed winning the Gander RV and Outdoors Truck Series, I just couldn't be more proud. I'm fortunate to sit in the chair that I sit. Jim France and Lisa Kennedy allow me to do this. And I've got a phenomenal team around me that really makes this sport go. But without that collaboration with our industry, it just wouldn't work. And particularly when you're facing something like we face this year. So, I think the couple of highlights that I want to touch on that I'm particularly proud of. So when we shut down, heading into Atlanta, we had no idea when we're to get back to racing. It was our goal and a stated goal that we are going to run all our races. And tomorrow when we crown a champion in our Cup Series, we will have run all our races. And we did it through ways that, you know, frankly, probably didn't think we could do, right? So a bunch of midweek races, three doubleheaders, you know, no practice in qualifying. It's just things that were kind of significant, you know, kind of in bedrock that we do, right? So you come to racetrack, you're here for 3 days, you practice, you qualify, and you're on your way, right? So for us to be the first sport back without fans initially on May 17th in Darlington to the first sport back with fans, I think is an extraordinary achievement. So, and I'll leave you with this before I open it up to questions. When we were here the last time and we raced here on March 8th, we were focused on, hey, how's that short track package going to work, right? It was up in the air. We weren't sure. We thought it was going to be great. And by the way, it was. And then, you know, 3-4 days later, the world, you know, goes crazy, right? And we're just in a situation that was unthinkable. What I would say is that on March 8th, we were a sport that was coming back, right? Our ratings had stabilized last year. Our attendance was going in the correct direction, right? If you think about where we are as a sport today, I believe we're stronger as a sport today than we were pre-COVID. I believe that. And I think that the momentum that we've been able to gain has been nothing short of incredible. And I think the other word I want to use that I stole from one of the senior people at Comcast is that your sport is relevant. And it's not that it wasn't relevant before, but where you are today, you're in a significantly different place. And I believe that to be true. So with that, I'll open it up for questions.
Great. Thanks, Steve. So again, a reminder for those here in the media center, if you have a question, raise your hand and go back to the microphone. We'll call on it. And for those on Zoom, again, please hand raiser, let us know, and then we'll call on you as we go through it. First question, Bob Pockris from Fox Sports. Bob, good to see you back in the media center.
Yeah, good to be here. Bob Pockris, Fox Sports. Steve, how do you envision the Daytona 500 as far as people in the grandstands, people in the infield garage, and kind of the pomp and circumstance of the event?
Yeah, Bob, I think I would say not just for the 500, but for our entire schedule. So we have this incredible schedule that has been put together. Leading out with the Daytona 500 on February 14th. Do I believe we're going to have fans in the stands? I do. What percentage of fans in the stands? I'm not sure. Will we have folks in the garage, fans in the garage? I don't know. What I would say is I can't wait till we do have fans back in the garage. Our sport is the hallmark of our sport is about accessibility, accessibility to the garage, accessibility to the drivers, the crews. We don't have that. And we don't have that because we need to keep people safe. And that's the only way we're going to run a race is if we're going to keep people safe. So, I don't know, Bob. You know, I do know that we are, you know, we have every intention of running on February 14th, the 500, and our plan is to race in front of fans.
All right, let's go with Jeff Gluck and then Michael Knight on Zoom after Jeff.
Hey, Jeff Gluck from The Athletic. Obviously, with the 28 one-day shows next year, things are going to change. It's not going to be like the last time we were here. Not just practice and qualifying, but the rhythm of how things go when drivers come in. How do you see the future sort of unfolding on race days? I mean, is it going to be, you know, sponsor heavy commitments in the mornings and then they just go race? What's your vision for what that will look like in the future?
So you're talking about Jeff.
Sorry, once things go back to sort of normal, yeah. not this, how it is now. Yeah.
I got it. Great. You know, that's a good question. I think what we've proven, Jeff, this year is that you can do things differently, right? And they can work. So what we're in the process of doing right now is looking at what that race day experience is going to look like, or race weekend experience is going to look like. And I think it's going to look different, right? I think there are things both from a competition standpoint, as well as a fan standpoint, sponsor standpoint, where we are going to reinvent ourselves and take the best of what we had during this COVID situation to make ourselves stronger in the future. What exactly that looks like, you know, we're doing planning right now, and we'll obviously do some things with, looking from the broad racetracks, not just our racetracks, but racetracks in general. We need to make sure that the fan experience is, you know, continues to improve. And when they come back, that, you know, we need to give them a reason to come back, right? So they have great racing, but you have great racing on television, right? We need to have a great fan experience that is going to look different almost certainly than it did before. And so it's incumbent upon us, our racetracks, to make sure that they're getting that fan experience. And we'll have to do that with our race teams, right? And our drivers, because, you know, it needs to be about access, right? And so if it's not going to be physical access, right, then what are the things that we can do that create something unique and different for a fan at the facility?
All right, let's go on Michael Knight and then Alex Andreev.
Good morning, Mr. Phelps. I'd like to ask you a two-part question. Would you reflect back onto March, April, and into May during the period where NASCAR itself and its teams had little or in perhaps some cases no revenue coming in? How would you characterize that period in terms of how close NASCAR or the teams came to basically not being able to move forward on a financial basis?
Well, I won't speak for the teams, Michael. I can speak for NASCAR. Let's see, it was our intention that we were going to get all these races in. And, now sitting here a race away, if you will, or a day away from doing that, it feels gratifying. I think the most difficult part of that period, Michael, really is just really the unknown, right? So there's so many things that were outside of our control that were, it got to a point literally where my phone would ring. I didn't want to answer it because there's nothing but bad news on the other side of that phone call. And so it was scary. It's scary for the industry as a whole. I think anyone who was in sports didn't sleep very well in March and April, mid-March to, April into May. And until the engines fired at Darlington, it was scary because you have so many things outside of your control that, there are a lot of us in this industry that are control freaks. I consider myself to be one of them. When you have things that are truly outside of your control and you are working hard to develop plans that are, you don't know if you can execute against them, it's just difficult. So I would say in a word, it was scary, but we developed a plan and we executed against that plan. And I think we executed very well.
Okay, the second part of the question is, and I'll ask this in the context, is that some of your contemporaries who are the presidents or CEOs or commissioners of other sports are publicly acknowledging financial situations. If 2021 moves into a significant part of the season with either little or no spectator attendance possible, no hospitality or on-site activation opportunities for sponsors, will the teams be viable business entities in 2021?
Sure. I would say, Michael, everyone's bottom line look more challenged? The answer is yes. Do I believe that we as a sport are going to shut down? We are not. We are going to run races, and we can sustain this period where we have limited number of fans, limited amounts of hospitality. Is it where we want to be? Of course not. But are we financially viable to move forward? We are. Do I think the majority of our race teams are in the same position? I do. You know, we have, you know, if you look at where we are from a viewership standpoint, our viewership has been phenomenal, right? Particularly on a relative basis. In an absolute basis, I think so as well. And so visibility for sponsors on race cars, they're in a good place. And, you know, obviously the B2B portion of it is, you know, a little bit more challenged. But do I think that we will weather the storm as a sport if things continue much like they have this year? The answer is yes. We are going to persevere, and we are going to continue to put on races and, you know, bring that great racing to the fan base.
Thank you for your time.
You're welcome, Michael.
All right, let's go with Alex, and then following Alex, Jenna Fryer.
Hey, Steve, thank you so much for your time and for doing this. I have two questions. My first one, I guess, is kind of timely. Obviously, we're going to have a new president in January, and Donald Trump was at this year's Daytona 500. So I'm wondering if NASCAR has any plans to invite Joe Biden out to any of the races.
You know, Alex, I think, you know, if a sitting president, as President Trump did this year, wants to come to a race, then we would welcome that sitting president. You know, I don't think, you know, we didn't reach out to President Trump to come to the Daytona 500. His people had reached out to us. But again, I don't see us reaching out to a sitting president. But again, if a sitting president wants to come to a racetrack, we would certainly welcome the sitting president.
Thank you. And then my following question is about, there's obviously a lot of interest in Cup team ownership, and I'm curious if NASCAR is considering expanding the number of charters available.
So we are not considering expanding the number of charters, Alex. It's the way the charter system works. We have the ability to expand if there's a new OEM. Without that, we do not. That's a contract that we have with our teams. So there'd be no expansion of our charters.
Thank you.
All right, let's go with Jenna Fryer and then Nate Ryan.
Hey, Steve. You know, last week, the 20 car didn't pass the 11 for whatever reason. NASCAR found nothing wrong with that. Fans are upset about the 100% rule and questioning if it was in play. Does the rule need to be addressed or rewritten in any way to avoid scenarios that leave interpretation open, such as last week?
Yeah, I think, you know, I know that Scott Miller had addressed that earlier in the week. You know, whether the rule needs to be looked at, I think we have shown Jenna repeatedly, if there's a better way to do something, we'll do it. Whether that's a rule change or, you know, some other competition change to, you know, a rules package or whatever that might be. I personally don't think that the rule needs to be changed, but, you know, we will certainly, again, as we do with everything, if there's a better way to do it, we'll find it and we'll do it.
Also, in Kevin Harvick not advancing to the finale, did the system work sort of the way it's supposed to work?
You know what? Listen, Kevin had an extraordinary season by any measure, right, with 9 wins. I would say he and Rodney, that team, they fought like champions, and they came up just short. I would say the drama that was – developed at the end of that race was extraordinary. I think the hard part is that, you know, as hard as they fought, right, there are opportunities for them in the 3 races because of the number of playoff points they had that made it such that, you know, everyone, if they're filling out their brackets, right, to who was going to the championship 4, put Hamlin and Harvick in there, right? I didn't think there were anyone thought there would be a scenario where they wouldn't make it, but they didn't, you know, and so I think that, you know, Kevin was very gracious in, you know, his remarks, and they didn't do enough to get there, but, you know, being two laps down and then one lap down and getting back on the lead lap with a car that was not where they were, it's hard to say they didn't perform, right? Because it's, they did everything they could in order to try to advance. And, you know, I, for one, as a fan, was super proud of what Kevin did and Rodney and the whole team did to try to advance. But I think the system, you know, the how the playoff system worked and those three incredible cutoff races, particularly the race in Martinsville, gave fans what they wanted, which was intense drama. And really this just amazing competition.
Well, so then yes, it did work because it was, you wanted game seven moments, correct?
I would suggest that. Did it work? Yes. I wouldn't say game seven moments. We'll keep it unique to our sport. But I think, yes, it's just the playoff system as designed, I think worked incredibly well.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Jenna.
All right, let's go with Nate Ryan, and then we have a follow-up here with Bob Pockris here in the Media Center.
Thanks, Eric. Steve, I have a question and a follow-up. I think the last time you spoke to us in September, you said at that point that you didn't see any way that garage access would expand until there was a vaccine available for COVID-19. So I'm wondering, going into 2021, where does NASCAR stand on that? Do you still see that as the only way forward to expanding garage access greatly? Is NASCAR looking at any rapid COVID-19 testing policy changes there? Are you looking at maybe doing COVID-19 testing across the board, perhaps in the future, regardless?
Yeah, so kind of two parts of the question, Nate. I think the first part, as it relates to the competitors and the current footprint or bubble or whatever we call this pristine area, it's something we'll look at. I would suggest that our sport did as well or better than other sports did with respect to how our protocols worked with our competitors. And a significant number of competitors that we have, not just our drivers, but our crews, our officials, the safety workers, been proud of how that works. But, you know, John Bobo and his team are always looking to see if there are ways to create a better, safer environment. And that was the goal all along, Nate, as you know, which is to make sure that our competitors felt safe in this environment, which then gets to the second part of your question. When we talked in September, I did say that until a vaccine was developed, widely distributed, that was effective, that we wouldn't have people in there. I will clarify that, which is if there's an opportunity, and I'm not sure there is, if there's an opportunity to have rapid tests, that is effective, that, you know, doesn't have a bunch of false negatives or false positives. It's something that we would entertain, but it's too early at this particular point to determine what that's going to look like.
And then follow up, Stephen, you mentioned, you know, NASCAR getting through the season and you know, ending exactly as you planned. Fortunate in that I'm sure you saw the news this week that cases across the country are now spiking into six figures daily, and many experts are predicting it's going to be a tough winter. What's your guidance for NASCAR through the next couple of months, knowing that teams and especially drivers won't be under your purview as much? Are you going to encourage them to remain as vigilant as they've been to get through this season? Is it going to be more of a hands-off policy, or do you want drivers and teams to, you know, stick to the same policies of isolation during the off season to ensure Daytona goes off without a hitch?
Yeah, listen, Nate, I think it's a tough question. Obviously, we want to keep people safe, right? We want our competitors to be safe. I think they obviously have done a good job of the isolation that they've done to try to make sure they remain safe and able to compete. But you know, I think that they are going to be away from us for, you know, roughly 3 months. You know, I would just ask them to be safe, as we would any part of our community and any part of our family. We want them to be. Yeah, it's scary, right? The spiking that we're seeing is scary. I think if we had thought if you think back to April or May and or March, I think people are like, well, this thing will burn out in the summer and we'll be good in the fall. Well, unfortunately, that's not where we are. And I want this to be over as much as anyone does. But we need to continue to make sure that we are being safe and our competitors are being safe. So I think, as it relates to NASCAR and our competitors, we are going to continue to do the things necessary in order to stay safe during this time period.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, let's go with a follow-up here from Bob and then Michelle Martinelli.
Yes, Steve, in past years, drivers and crew members suspended under the behavioral policy would just attend sensitivity training and be reinstated fairly quickly. Larson, it took several months, even though he finished sensitivity training within a couple of weeks. Why is his case different? And what are you using? I could see in a road to recovery, there's science and that kind of dictates whether somebody comes back, but this seems very subjective. What are the parameters for somebody to come back from what Larson did?
Yeah, I think actually it's a good case study moving forward, Bob. And I think part of the case study is that there is some subjectivity that comes with it, right? There isn't a hard and fast rule. And I think that's where, frankly, that we need to be. A point of clarification, yes, Kyle did take sensitivity training that we had mandated that he do early on. And then he went above and beyond, right? Because he thought that was what he needed to do for himself. And I think his road back, I think it was an incredible journey for him. And if you talk to him, and I know many of you have, it's heartwarming to hear him talk about what that journey looks like. Or what it looked like. And I do think that each case is going to be looked at on a case by case basis. Kyle didn't ask for reinstatement early on, into the spring, into the summer, and then till we got to the fall, where he did ask for reinstatement because he felt he was, his journey was complete. And we agreed with him. Again, he went above and beyond. I think he was humbled by the whole experience, and I'm proud of the job that he did.
All right, let's go with Michelle Martinelli and then Jerry Jordan in the press box.
Hi, Steve. Earlier this season, you said that words are without action are meaningless in terms of addressing racism and the sport being more inclusive. So going forward, is NASCAR doing something concrete to continue its anti-racism and inclusivity efforts within or outside of the industry? And can we expect to see things like Black Lives Matter written on the infield again, or continued support for the LGBTQIA community, or anything like that that shows solidarity or welcomes others in?
Yeah, I think, Michelle, what I would say is that will you continue to see results and action from NASCAR? The answer is yes. So we have broken our, kind of in this area into three specific buckets. One is what we're going to do internally. The middle bucket is what we're going to do from an industry-wide standpoint. And the third, what are the partnerships that we're going to do externally? And I would say on the internal side, we've done things that it's really just about us, obviously. So we have an ally council, we have a diversity council, we have employee resources groups that we've put together to try to make sure that we're doing what we need to do. We also have a drive to make sure that we are hiring diverse people, right? And that's a stated goal for us as well. And then we're doing, as part of our procurement, we're doing you're making sure we have minority vendors as part of that too. So that's internal. External is what are we going to do as an industry? One of the things we're going to do, and we had talked about this early on around Talladega, is that we, as an industry, we are going to mandate that everyone takes sensitivity training and unconscious bias training. And we're going to do that. So before we get to the 500, all the race teams, anyone affiliated with this sport is going to do that, right? That's part of our internal community. And then the third thing is, what are you going to do from an external standpoint? So partnerships with Comcast, Coca-Cola, Anheuser-Busch, Geico, and others, as well as some other groups like ISSJ or RISE or others that we're using to try to help in this education process. So we believe we are a sport about action, and we are going to continue to be. It's an important journey for us to be on, and I'm excited about what the future holds there.
All right, let's go Jerry Jordan and then Chris Knight in the press box.
Steve, Jerry Jordan, kickingthetires.net. Michael Knight touched on this a little bit about when you answered him about the viability of teams and the sport. And then Nate brought up the numbers of COVID increasing. Could NASCAR or can NASCAR survive another COVID shutdown if it was mandated nationally? And also, what have you learned that you could carry forward should there be some type of a shutdown mandated going forward? How would y'all handle that?
Well, I think the tough part, Jerry, is it goes back to what I said kind of initially in my opening, which is there are things outside of our control. Will we scenario plan for all of those things that we can identify? The answer is yes, we are going to. And I think that we showed this year as a sport that we did as good or a better job than any sport did, frankly, getting back early and often. I believe as of tomorrow, we will be the only sport that finished a full season. The NFL is obviously in the midst of theirs. We are hopeful that they continue with their progress and finish their season. But as of now, or as of tomorrow, we're the only major sport that finished a full season. So certainly proud of that. What happens in the future? Again, it's difficult to say, Jerry, just because we don't know what it looks like. Don't know whether it's going to be, you know, federal, local. As of now, we're going to go to Daytona and run the Daytona 500 on February 14th. And then we're going to adjust as needed based on what things are thrown at us.
Do those possibilities give you some cause for fear that something could happen? I appreciate you answering my questions.
Yeah. Again, things that are unknown or difficult. I wouldn't say it's fear, but it's just, you know, we were presented with significant obstacles this year. And with those obstacles, we either went around them, we jumped over them, or we knocked them down. Do I think as an industry, we are better prepared for another wave of whatever that's going to be? Yeah, I do. And we've proven it. I think they're the uniqueness of our sport, how we run our sport, how we come together as an industry, where we run our races, I think it gives us some flexibility that other sports, frankly, just don't have.
All right, let's go with Dustin Long. Let's go with Chris Knight and then Dustin Long.
Hey, Steve, thanks for your time. I was just curious, one of the adjustments we saw post-shutdown was you guys expanded the field in the Xfinity and Truck Series to 40 vehicles. And I was just wondering if that was the plan to continue that for 2021.
That's a good question. Honestly, I don't know the answer to that, but we can certainly get, here's what I'd say. I would suggest that if we did it this year, we're probably going to do it again next year, but I do not know the answer.
Thank you, Steve.
Let's go with Dustin Long. And then we have a follow-up here from Jeff Gluck in the media center.
Thank you, Steve. Obviously, there's no question that the challenges that you guys have faced this year to get to this point. But obviously, as any business, it can't be just about the immediacy. It's also about looking ahead. And while I know there's certain uncertainties and challenges, you referenced earlier the notion of relevancy in the sport. And certainly, the sport has faced some challenges in the past, no doubt about that. How do you envision or how do you hope to continue that relevancy for the sport so that it grows and becomes a stronger thing to and the potential of adding another manufacturer since everything's being put back a year or so with the plans?
Yeah, I think, Dustin, that it's hard to say, hey, we are going to continue relevance. I think it's kind of an arrogant statement. I do think there's some building blocks here that would suggest that that's going to continue, right? So we have new ownership coming into the sport. That new ownership comes with different levels, right? And then we have different drivers affixed to those new owners. So take the Michael Jordan situation with Denny Hamlin and Bubba Wallace, or the situation with Justin Marks and Danny Suarez, or the Tiffs and BJ McLeod. These are, you know, kind of all across the spectrum. Do I believe that we are positioned well to continue that relevance? I do. I think we've seen this year the significant number of new fans who are participating in this sport. And then because the, you know, kind of the positions that we have taken, the great racing that we've had, the fact that we came back first, all those different pieces that created this relevance. So do I think we're positioned to continue that? I do think we're positioned to continue that. And I'm bullish on what the future looks like. I know as the kind of a head cheerleader of the sport, I'm supposed to say that. But if you look at where we are from a rating standpoint, you look at kind of where the sport is overall in the general, you know, kind of thought process of where things are in this country, I think we're in a much better position than we were, as I said, pre-COVID.
And also, Steve, obviously, you know, you've been very outspoken about just, you know, human basic rights and obviously the issue with the Confederate flag. You talk about new fans. You know, can the sport afford to be as vocal moving forward? Certainly, there are those who feel that the it's a more conservative fan base, and how you felt like the fans have responded in that time since, and gaining new and losing some, and what you can do maybe moving forward and being maybe potentially more aggressive in things.
Yeah, I know, Dustin. I think kind of on balance, you look at those new fans versus, you know, fans that we have quote lost. I think that, you know, for us, it's really about this notion of welcoming everyone to our sport. And I think people are feeling welcome to our sport. I think by and large, people have said, hey, NASCAR means more to me than displaying my Confederate flag or displaying a Confederate flag at our facilities. And I think by and large, that has been a true statement. And so, you know, what we do from a social justice standpoint moving forward really, to me, is about, to your point, it's human decency. We want to make sure that people want to come to our facilities. We want to make sure that they want to participate in this sport on television, on radio, and digital and socially. We want them to feel a part of this community. It's a fantastic community. It really is. And, you know, I know when I go to a racetrack and I see, you know, people who are camping next to each other, who are total strangers, that invite each other for a beer, or, hey, do you want a hot dog, or, you know, brats, or whatever it is, you know, that's what our community is about. And we want to make sure that everyone feels welcome when they come to those facilities.
Thank you.
All right, let's go with a follow-up from Jeff Gluck here in the media center, and then Dustin Albino.
Yeah, just sort of in the weeds maybe, but following up on something you said a couple months ago when there was the prospect of Denny becoming a team owner, obviously driving for a four-car team, you said we want to make sure that NASCAR would be satisfied that it's not just a fifth car.
Sure.
What have you seen, I guess, that alleviated those concerns, and will they have to show anything going forward to make sure that it's not just a fifth JGR team?
Yeah, no, I think it's something that obviously our competition guys are going to look at. Jeff, to make sure that it isn't a fifth JGR team. I there obviously is a technical alliance there, as there was a technical alliance with Furniture Row and Levine family. So technical alliances are fine. It is a unique situation in that we're going to a new car in 2022, which will kind of change the game board completely. With that said, you know, I'm sure that, you know, Michael, Denny, you know, their acting president right now, Steve LaLetta, that they will certainly, we will need to be satisfied that they are not operating as a fifth JGR team. So it's something we'll monitor for sure.
All right, let's go Dustin Albino and then Greg Engel.
Yes, Steve, I know you can't predict the future, but the introduction of the next gen car was pushed back to 2022. Do you see any way that doesn't get introduced in 22?
It's hard to say. We are on schedule. John Probst and his team have done a great job working with our OEMs, working with the teams to get us to a place where, we feel confident where things are. I just think the hard part is, we were confident that we were going to introduce it in 2021. And then it became very clear that we couldn't. So it really has to do with, are we going to have the parts and pieces in order to make this car, to build it in at scale in order to have enough cars to race? As of right now, the answer is absolutely yes. And our guys are excited about it. I think we all are excited about it. We've seen some of the renderings. It's a cool looking car that I think will have some great characteristics that'll make the racing even better than we've seen this year. So again, it's hard to predict the future, but as given the things that we know today, we're in good shape.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, let's go Greg Engel and then Adam Stern.
Hey, sir, congrats and thanks for putting together a full season for us. You kept a lot of us in the media employed. Obviously, the one-day shows have been successful, and they're going to continue at most of the tracks next season. And the drivers and owners agree that the one-day shows are great cost savers, which is something near and dear to you guys' hearts. Were the one-day shows something that was discussed long before the pandemic, or did they come about as a result of the plan to get back to racing and simply as a happy accident that is proven to keep costs down?
Yeah, I would say whatever mad scientist would come up with a one-day show would have been shot down pretty quickly. So it really is from the pandemic, and it really was the industry coming together and say, can you do it, right? Can you do it as race teams? Can you do it as racetracks? Can you do it, from an officiating standpoint? And the resounding answer was yes, obviously. And I think the great news is that the racing, again, arguably is as good as it's ever been. And so, do I think, we have 28 one-day shows next year, 8 that we do not, that we're going to have practice and qualifying. What does that look like in 22 as we unveil a new car? Probably a lot more practice and qualifying. How much? What's it look like? Will be determined when we get a little closer to that particular season.
Thank you, sir. And thanks again. Congratulations. And especially to Eric and all the media folks who've done a great job getting us all our coverage resources. Can't wait to be pestering you guys all in person soon. Thanks again.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, let's go Adam Stern, and then we have a follow-up from Michael Knight.
Hey, Steve, thanks for your time. Has everything that's happened because of COVID kind of clouded NASCAR's ability to judge how the Phoenix market was going to respond to getting the championship race this weekend? And if so, how does that impact how you try to judge whether you should start rotating the race every couple of years or try to make Phoenix more of a long-term home beyond 2021?
Adam, it is unfortunate that we're in this situation. Fortunate that we're going to have fans today and tomorrow, but unfortunate that the sellout that was announced in March around the race here, we're not going to see that. You go out and back, you look at camping. Camping looks phenomenal, which is great to see. I would suggest the Governor Ducey, Ken Weiss here in Avondale, just the entire Phoenix community has responded incredibly well and really excited to have us here. So there are some activities that have happened to kind of prime the pump here in Phoenix, but they're not what they were going to be, unfortunately. And that part's sad, but there's so many difficult things to the season overall. We know that the season finale will be run here again next year, and we are hopeful that we'll run it in front of full grandstands, and all the activities in the greater Phoenix area are going to come off. And there's a Phoenix host committee that had done some really good work. Julie Giese and her staff here have done some phenomenal things as well, just to get ready. The facility looks fantastic. It's just unfortunate that everyone can't experience it. So it's a bit bittersweet, but I do think that this market is going to, it has responded incredibly strongly to us coming here. Visually, when you go around the city, you know that our championship is here, and that's heartwarming.
Thank you.
All right, let's go Michael Knight next, and then we have a few more questions.
Steve, if COVID would require the NFL to slide back its schedule, would you commit now to saying that NASCAR would not run Daytona 500 against the Super Bowl, even if it means moving the Daytona 500 date?
No, I will not say that, Michael. So we right now we're running on February 14th. That's as much information as we have. You know, will we potentially scenario plan for a change? Perhaps. But I don't foresee that. It's just hard to say. The NFL is, they're trying to get their season in, and thus far they've done a good job of having the majority of their football games take place. But I think, it's at this particular point, don't want to speculate what would happen with the 500 if the NFL were to put the Super Bowl on February 14th. We'll react to that at that particular time, and obviously make sure our friends at Fox are aligned with the decision that we make.
In the last week, there have been some business stories highlighting the fact that some major Super Bowl sponsors, including Anheuser-Busch, are either going to significantly scale back their hospitality and or on-site activation at the Super Bowl. Does that give you any concern from a bottom line standpoint for Daytona?
Well, I think that what I would say, Michael, is, if we continue the way we're continuing, then, our bottom line is going to be less for sure. But again, we're going to make sure that we're making decisions that are in the best interest of the sport in order to keep, those that are coming to race safe, but also the competitors, sponsors, media partners that we have to make sure they're safe as well. So if folks are going to scale back their hospitality, we certainly understand that. We saw a lot of that this year. In some facilities, we couldn't have any hospitality, right? Because all we were doing was racing there. No fans, no suites. No midway. So we'll look at that on a case-by-case basis based on where things are in the country. And then again, working with local and state governments and health officials to make sure that we are abiding by what they're interested in doing and what they believe is in the best interest of their communities. And then we'll do the same thing for our community to make sure that we are keeping our community safe as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Michael.
All right, we got time for three more questions. We're going to go Casey Campbell, then we're going Lee Spence, and we're going to close out with Jordan Bianchi.
Thank you very much, Eric. Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm well.
A couple questions from me. This is the first year of the NASCAR ARCA partnership. How do you see them doing, and how have you worked well with Ron Draeger and his team?
Yeah, listen, Ron and his team, they're fantastic. Ron has been a friend, of the France family for a long time. There's a healthy respect that existed before, we acquired ARCA. ARCA has shown that it is a great kind of proving ground or stepping stone for those that are headed up to our national series. Sheldon Creed, last night, or Chase Briscoe. I mean, so many different folks that have gone through that series. We think it's a phenomenal development series for us. And obviously you've got some veterans that are participating in this series as well. It provides us an opportunity to go to some facilities where we typically don't race that are kind of the bedrock of what NASCAR racing is from a short track standpoint, which we think is good for the season. So, I've got great things to say about Ron. He's a quality individual, and they run a, you know, a lean and very effective organization, and we're glad they're part of NASCAR.
And also, we did see, and before the season started in COVID, they announced that Xfinity and trucks were also doing, we're going to be having some races with controlled pit stops. And we saw that a lot in ARCA with the standalone races. We don't have many of those in the 2021 season. Is that something we're going to see in 2021 or no?
As it relates to trucks and Xfinity, I don't think so. Again, it remains to be seen, but if I were a betting man, I would say probably not. But we'll keep that open.
All right. Thank you, Steve. And thank you, Eric.
All right. Let's go two more. We got Lee Spencer and then Jordan Bianchi to close us out. Lee.
Thank you, Eric. And congratulations, Steve, on your team and the tracks for being able to pull this off this year. In the wake of the pandemic, has that at all hurt the opportunities for potential manufacturers outside of the sport to come in and kick the tires?
Yeah, I think the difficulty for us, Lee, we were super focused, obviously, on getting the races in. You know, we haven't had a ton of conversations with other OEMs during this COVID situation. They've, you know, kind of had their own issues, you know, with supply chains and making sure they're getting vehicles out. When the season ends, we'll start to kind of, you know, restart those conversations. It's just been, you know, only certain number of hours in a day, and that those have taken a little bit of a step back. Or at least on a pause, not a step back, but a pause. And I think that we'll ramp those discussions back up. And, you know, again, I'll go back to it. I think we are actually a more attractive sport today to a new OEM than we were, you know, back in March. And I believe that to be true. It's not that we were not an attractive sport for them to make investments in our sport, but I think now more than ever.
And if someone did come in, would there be a potential to expand the charter system? Because, I mean, it'd be really tough to figure out where a new manufacturer who wanted to have a, you know, start out on an equal playing field, where that security would come in ensuring that they're in the field every week.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, Lee, the answer to that. We have the opportunity to do that. Someone coming in wouldn't come in, I would suggest, probably 2023 at the earliest. I think the world's just going to look a lot different at NASCAR once you get to this, kind of the next gen car. And just the dynamics are going to change so significantly. If we deem that it would be in the best interest of the sport to add an additional charter or two to try to help jumpstart a new OEM, that's something we'd consider.
Appreciate your time. Good luck this weekend.
Thank you, Lee.
All right, last question. Jordan Bianchi brings home.
Steve, new teams or new owners are considering coming into the Cup Series. Conceivably, they're going to have to buy charters and everything, and the cost of charters is rising. Are you guys encouraged by what you're seeing from the charter system and it's working now how it was devised?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jordan. I think that one of the thoughts about the charter system, and this really gets to the business of NASCAR. You know, fans, they don't care about charters. But one of the thoughts on the business side for charters is that if someone decided to leave a sport, that they would have enterprise value that they'd be able to sell, sell their race car or race team. And make some money. And I think that's something that is happening in this system. It's not the only reason why the charter system exists. I think there are things about the charter system that work quite well. And there are others that, you know, I think we could probably improve on moving forward. It's something that we're not faced with at this particular time. The charters go through 2024. So again, I think it's working. I think it's working well in some cases. And again, as I said, in other cases, I think there are some things that, we would look to change moving forward.
Great. Steve, thank you for the time today. We really appreciate it. To our media, thank you again for incredible coverage this year as we've gone through an extraordinary season. You guys have continued to deliver for our fans, and we thank you all for that. Look forward to crowning a couple champions, and we got a big one tomorrow as well. All right. Thank you all.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Eric.